This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Welcome to it. Monday mornings here on CliffCentral.com. Thanks for joining. My name is Ben Karpinski, and you're listening to The Bounce Show again. These weeks really do fly, and the weekends are just making them even more enjoyable with so much action. Wow, it was cricket again, hey? Cricket all happening this time of the year, and the Proteas are looking good. That's 5 wins in a row against England. But without being too much of a dampener, you'd kind of trade them all in for the Test Series victory, wouldn't you? Anyway, we'll get into the cricket in a bit. But to tell you, it is 22 days now until the World T20, well, the T20 World Cup, if you prefer it saying that way. 22 days until we're going to cover a hell of a lot of that. It's going to be, I think the Minnows will play like a preliminary round, and then they play against the seeded teams after that. So 22 days till that starts. Even closer though, it's 5 days. That's Super Rugby. Super Rugby starts this weekend. And today I've got a really special guest that's going to be all about the rugby. Absolute rugby legend, a voice you just can't ever miss. So he'll be in a little bit later on. 44 days until the Masters. That's another thing to look out for. We're getting closer and closer to all the big milestones. We're at this really great point in that we've had like a nice intro to the sporting year, and now it's just going to get bigger and bigger and better. 165 days to the Olympics. Now, if you're not into the Olympics, I'm sure you will be as it gets closer, but it'll be a very interesting Olympics because it'll be more like Survivor Rio, I think, at this rate. With the water being so terrible, the Zika virus on the spread, the IAAF banning countries from even participating. Wow, we are on for some exciting, exciting times ahead. It really is, as I always say, it's a good time to be alive. And you're right here on The Bounce Show, where everything about sport shall become known to you. It's just the best place to check in on a Monday. Thank you so much for joining me. If you are listening live, be sure to chat to us. Duncan's in the booth. He'll take the calls. But if you want to chat on WeChat, simply send a message and it will come up on the screen and we can interact like that. Alternatively, get me on Twitter at Follow the Bounce. Send through a tweet and we'll take it from there. But first, before we get into the headlines, I've got to stop this and play you this.
Thailand is the home of kickboxing, and get a look at these silky skills. Here comes a left, no, a right roundhouse. Red pants guy is having trouble seeing. The referee yells at him, what are you doing? You're getting up, you're staying down, you're going home. Red pants is like, no, I'm fucking good, let's fight. Oh, the ref takes a hit, doesn't even care. Blue pants is getting a lot of punches in. Red pants is doing the strategy where you take a lot of heat. Oh no, he can't see shit. After the 53rd blow, he's like, right, I know where you are. You're fucking in front of me. I'm coming for you now, dickhead. Fucking sonic boom. Take that. And he does. He gets straight back up. Goes for a kick. Oh, daredevil-like senses from Red Pants. In comes another punch. The ref goes down again. I think all of them could be concussed, but don't quite know it. Here comes a knockout, surely. Fuck! Someone get that ref out of there. Red Pants finally has his gloves up and also turns into fucking Neo from the Matrix. The ref has to stop supernatural shit happening. Look at that army general. These motherfuckers are crazy. Blue Pants is looking for a big finishing move. Nope, that's not the one. Seriously, this referee, he is drunk as fuck. He can't walk straight, but I love his passion, his enthusiasm, so I'd recommend him 10 out of 10. These boys are tired. Get out of my fucking ring! And here's a kick in your thick skull. Don't come back. But he does. The crowd is amazed that they are getting to witness two immortals fighting at their best. Whoa! That was a massive jump. Red Pants, too nimble for him again, though. It appears the fight is coming to an end now, as everyone has simply had enough. The referee decides it's time to do some push-ups. The fighters promote peace and love. You really couldn't ask for a happier ending in Bangkok. Okay, well, that's a fucking lie, but you know what I mean. I honestly don't know who has won. I think the referee has won. Everyone takes a bow, just claims it. Anyway, join us again on Kickboxers Who Give Zero Fucks.
The letters from Aussie Man Reviews. This guy is just so funny. And he's, I don't know where he gets all these really great clips from. It's just so interesting that there is so much on the YouTube of fights that really are terrible and sloppy kickboxing. Go on to the bounce.co.za right now and you'll see that video in its entirety. The visuals are really quite something. This is like a fat guy fighting a thin guy, and yeah, they both kind of knock the ref out. So let's get into the headlines. We've got Dan from Conquer Sport coming in a little bit later. As you know, today we're talking about subjectivity around sport and how Fans are either they love or hate people. So that's look forward to, along with our big rugby discussion, which will to all both take place after the headlines. First thing to look into is the Proteas. Now, as I said in the top of the show, 5 wins in a row now against England. And England, well, I think they just ran out of steam, really. You could see it in the ODIs. They were trying to win that thing 3-0. They ended up losing it 3-2 after winning the first two. And then it came to the T20 side, and, well, you got to look at a team like England. They have been on the up and up in a limited overs kind of sense. So you would think they would have put in quite a good fight. Well, it wasn't to be. Cape Town, it was a very flattering result there for them in that they only lost by 1 wicket. They set a pretty feeble total after an absolutely blazing start between Roy and Hales. But then Imran Tahir came in. They had no answer for him. Tahir ran amok and he also ran around the field. And then the Proteas batsmen just didn't ever want to really kind of crush the chase. They just kept dabbling here and there, a couple of good shots from time to time. Like, I know that Newlands isn't exactly like the Wanderers where you can just blaze and get, you know, hit through the line with gay abandon. But anyway, it got down to the point where the Proteas needed 15 from 6. I mean, it never should have got to that stage, but who cares? We've got Chris Morris. How good is this guy becoming? Like, everyone at this level of sport, okay? Now, if you're a pro and you're making good money like these guys, everyone can hit a 6. Anyone can do whatever you think. But it's what happens between the ears at the right moment. Chris Morris just has the BMT. Like, we haven't seen this since, I think, Lance Klusener days. I know it's only been 2 matches, and I should probably calm down. I get very excited when these things finally happen for us. But to have 15 of 6, it was just good hitting. And poor Reece Topley, I think he's going into mild depression after how he dropped that game, really. The ball came in. He had to take off the bails, drop the ball. 2 runs where it should have just been a single, and the Proteas won that. But yesterday, what a game that was. There was 20 sixes and 25 fours, most of them coming from the bat of the Proteas. It was a really, really cool game, and as always, the Wanderers never disappoints. The Proteas winning that by 9 wickets in the end. England had a bit of a shaky start. Well, they had a first ball reprieve. JP Dumley dropped a ball off Kakiso Rabada. But they managed to get, weather that sort of storm, had a great partnership between Morgan and Butler. But then they lost 7 wickets for 14 runs. 171 they eventually got in 19.4 overs, so they were bowled out. And the Proteas, well, Umla and de Villiers, what a show that was. It really was. They were just swinging huge sixes, and they had 100 runs in no time whatsoever. 125 was this opening stand of just over 50 balls. Damage was done. The English had no hope of coming back into that one. And they had 5 overs left, 32 balls remaining. Proteas winning that by 9 wickets. So, what is next, you may ask? Well, we've got the Aussies coming here now, and what that means is, I would say, a slightly sterner test. Now, if you were to look at the Aussies T20-wise recently, they got thrashed by India at home. They do, of course, have that really strong T20 league, the Big Bash, which is a nice thing to kind of draw talent from. But are they picking the right talent? Now, we spoke to Dennis from Australia recently. Dennis is our go-to man when it comes to Aussie sports. And he said that sometimes they just don't seem to look like they want to have the best team going there. And it's a fair point, too. A guy like Nathan Lyon should be in all formats. He's that good. You got to wonder if the Mitch Marsh brothers are in there. Should Khawaja play more? Is Watson definitely the best player? Too many question marks. But they're going to come here. And, of course, they'll be decent in the conditions. So the first game we've got to look forward to there is Friday, the 4th of March. That's SA versus Oz in Durban. I don't know why we ever play in Durban. We never win there, but anyway. Sunday, the 6th of March, back at the Fortress of the Wanderers in Johannesburg. And then the final T20 there will be Wednesday, March the 9th in Cape Town. Probably be like a relatively low-scoring match. So the Proteas have got the most perfect run-in to this T20 World Cup in that they've just had a really good run-out against England. It showed they've got a really good team. And now they've got 3 matches against the Aussies and then 2 warm-up matches in India before they get going. And I think they've got Sri Lanka, West Indies. England will be their first match in the World Cup itself, and they play one of the qualifiers. And, there's 4 matches there. So we've got the easier group, I think. So the big question is, what is this team, though? Well, last week on The Bounce, I wrote an article about what the best team could or could not be. And it just looks like an embarrassment of riches right now. We've got so many good batsmen that someone like Hashim Amla might actually miss out. Now, you wouldn't think that's possible, but look at all the guys that can bat in the top 3 positions. Quinton de Kock was rested over the weekend. So we've got a batting lineup that is so good that Behar Din won't even get in on sympathy. It's not even going to happen. You've got a guy like Chris Morris who's going to finish for us down the order if need be. David Visa, you can also bat bloody well. So it's kind of like, what are we going to do with the bowlers? Well, it's going to be in India, so we're going to pick two spinners, that's pretty sure. I think Pangisa will probably come through just because he's a left-arm spinner. Although I think the Tahir Dimini axis will be the sort of go-to spin options. Is Dale Steyn going to be fit? Look, we just got so many good options from a South African perspective right now. So very, very upbeat about that, which is nice. It's nice to be upbeat about the boys again. It's been a long, tough summer, but up and up. Sadly, the ladies, the Proteas women's side, they did not win their series against England. The spirited bunch of the Pom girls, they won 2-1 there. And then in the other test, well, the other cricket news from the weekend, Brendan McCullum's final test is currently taking place. Doesn't look like New Zealand are going to win this one. I think they've got 6 wickets in hand, but they're already trailed by, I think, 14 runs in their second dig with the bat. But the test will be always remembered for the fact that Brendan McCullum got the fastest 100 of 54 balls. He literally was just swinging, and he was just connecting. Some would say it's like, you know, broken clock, right twice a day. But McCullum is a forceful player, and he's got a test 300 to his name. So you can say what you want about his swing and miss tactics. The guy, he really is. He's added so much. Played 101 test matches for New Zealand, and I think they were all consecutive. I could stand corrected. 101 tests. That is such a huge, huge service to his country. And he has done so much for New Zealand cricket. And as I was saying earlier this morning on the Gareth Cliff Show, here's an example of how we actually need to embrace T20, because McCullum's career was good, but he wasn't incredible. Suddenly the IPL came along, and he really came into his own in his 30s, and his style of play has just transcended all formats. And you will see guys going at it a whole lot more because of guys like him and the things that he has done. So it's always really, really encouraging to see players pushing the boundaries, and McCullum was one of them. So he'll now no doubt go into the lucrative world of T20 mercenary work, and away he goes in that. Just on the messages, Black Box, I do enjoy your input. We'll get to messages a little bit later in the show. But he's going to quickly mention his team, the best team that SA can have in the T20 World Cup. And he believes it should be De Kock and AB up front, so no space for Umla. Then Faf, Riley Rousseau, JP Dumini, Miller, Visa, Morris, Rabada, Abbott, and Tahir. He then goes on to say that Dale Steyn can get fucked. We've been winning without him. Okay, well, strong views, Black Box, but good views not all the same. Yeah, it's interesting to think that Umla's going to step up. But, you know, yesterday was only a second 50, as Black Box pointed out earlier. It's just something about that dude. He's a rock in this team. He really is. And people, I think, feel quite good around him. And if he's going to score a 50 at, say, a strike rate of 120 at the top, everyone can else just rotate on a big swing. Oh, this Proteas team, I'm getting really, really excited about it. Really cool. Let me change the topic before I get too gushy. Anyway, in football, there was the FA Cup action from the weekend, which was really cool. Amazing if you're a Chelsea fan, so if you're an Arsenal fan. Arsenal just couldn't get to the back of the net, to the back of the Hull net. 0-0, which means they now need to play a replay at Hull. It's always a sticky situation for these big Premier League teams. You want to get it done at home, because then you've got to go play, if you don't, you've got to go play a midweek game somewhere horrible where people with mostly working class jobs just shout profanities at you. It can't be easy. Watford, they beat Leeds 1-0. Reading, they beat West Brom 3-1. Everton beats Bournemouth away 2-0. Blackburn, they took a hammering to the Hammers. West Ham 5-1. Spurs lost out to Crystal Palace 1-0. And then Chelsea just absolutely blew away a young Man City team 5-1. Tonight, Shrewsbury will take on the Man United at 9:45. And what that all means is, well, the draw is as such. Reading will take on Crystal Palace in the next round. Everton will take on Chelsea in the next one. Arsenal or Hull will take on Watford. And then Shrewsbury/Man United, well, they'll play against West Ham. In the local Premier League, Sundowns, well, are they going to become suddenly quite brittle going into the season? It's kind of almost like a victory lap for them when you think they've got a 7-point gap. They've looked so good. They've scored more goals than anyone by a long shot. But now all of a sudden, well, they drop points against Arrows at home, whereas Wits keep on winning. So they beat Tux 2-1 in an inter-varsity challenge, I suppose you could say. So that means now 7-point gap. Now, I know it's slow, that's huge breathing room, but if Sundowns drop points again and suddenly Wits win again, let's just say that gap goes to 5. 5 quickly becomes 2, and 2, well, anyone's game. Exciting way to end the season. I think, you know, last year Chiefs were also so far ahead. And they also started, but they did hang on in the end. It'll be interesting to see if it's going to be the same fate now for Sundowns. You know, the sporting news, it was a big golfing weekend, but, well, Bubba Watson won, so it's never a popular win, that. Incredibly talented guy, but he's a bit of a doss. But he had held off a very star-studded field. Dustin Johnson got into contention again before doing his famous disappearing act. Adam Scott, he looked really, really good. He was, I think, 4-under through the first five holes yesterday, or five through six. He chipped in on the end for a birdie on 18, but just not enough. Bubba Watson, he was two behind at one stage. Jason Kokrak got ahead, but then he sort of just went all limp in the last few holes. So Bubba Watson, that is, I think, his 10th US PGA Tour title. Here's a guy that loves playing at Augusta, and we said at the top of the show, just 44 days now until the Masters. You can't discredit Bubba for that major ever, because he likes to hit a cut. So he just stands there with that pink driver of his and just opens up his stance and hit a cut all day. A lot of the holes dogleg from right to left, so skips Bubba down to the ground. All he has to do is just nail a few putts, and it could be a third green jacket. That'll be really disappointing, but still, what an exciting year ahead for golf when you think you've got Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler. Oh, there's just so many good players. And those Masters, that's going to be, wow. We'll get into that close to the time. We've got a really great golf expert to draw upon for that. So all in due course. George Coetzee won in the Sunshine Tour, the local event. And that was your golfing action for the week. That just had passed. Now, a couple of other stories I want to get to. That's pretty much the stuff you need to know has happened on the field. But off the field, Richie McCaw is talking about the fact that New Zealand need to change their flag. Now, if you do know geography or anything like that, you'll find out that Australia and New Zealand are very similar in many ways. Flag-wise, it's almost identical. The stars on, well, the Aussie flag's got the Union Jack top left, and then they've got basically a sea of blue and then some stars. Now, the New Zealand flag's exactly the same, only there's red on the stars. So I think Richie, after running out and winning all those matches for the All Blacks, he just got so tired of playing against Australia and seeing these flags looking identical. So he says that the flag must change. Dan Carter says the same. Even their Prime Minister is saying that the flag needs to change. So I think when you got the sort of trifecta of those three. The weird thing is, though, New Zealanders, they've had a poll about this for a few years now. They've been going on and on about, you know, should it be changed? Is it too colonial? Should we go into a bold new era? Majority of people have said, let's keep the flag. They don't mind. I think New Zealand don't actually mind so much being in the shadows, because then people underestimate them in sport, which, well, we see the downfall of that. But what would the New Zealand flag be? That's the thing. People are talking about a silver fern. It should be black. It should maybe still have the Union Jack on it. But if it's a New Zealand flag, it's got to have something with the All Blacks on. I mean, people wouldn't know about New Zealand if it wasn't for Richie McCaw and this rugby team. So I think William Webber's trophy, there should be sort of like a black jersey, something along the lines of that. Flags should be a lot more sort of up-to-date, I think. You know, we've got quite a progressive country, of course. In 94, we got a great new flag, and it's kind of cool. But like anthems become stale, flags become stale too. Jazz them up a little bit. Go ahead, New Zealand. Make the right call. Another rugby news off the field, Andre Pollard. Now, you know, he went to Japan, got a shoulder injury, and then he came back about to play for the Bulls again, and suddenly season-ending knee injury. So what happens in a case like this? Well, you're contracted, so you basically still get paid, and you go through rehab. Well, yes and no. The funny thing is, now, because Pollard already had an injury where his insurance and that kind of stuff covered it, he was covered and everything was fine. But apparently, because he then got another injury on top of that, his cover for his previous injury has now lapsed, and now he's got this new injury which he's kind of liable for. So it looks like it's going to be 6 months until Pollard potentially earns money again. And you just never think this is going to happen with sports stars, that they could ever go through a stage where they don't make money. But that is the word in the street right now, is that Pollard is not going to make money now because he's got this huge injury. If he goes any longer, then some other policies kick in, and then he's got another 18 months, I think, with the My Players Fund, if I stand corrected. So, oh, it's uncertain times. Look, the guy is out for so long, so it's not like he can make a miraculous recovery and make some money. So, geez, this is where rugby players and other people need to have some MC skills, I guess, or have something, or just amazing abs like Pierce Beast did, and do insurance ads. Because if you're sitting on your ass, you're not making any money. Well, it's quite tricksy, isn't it? But just speaking of that injury, now the reason that these players are getting more injured is because the seasons are never ending. We all know that it's absolutely horseshit how these guys play themselves into the ground. It's very much, killing the golden goose who lays the eggs, really. So it looks like Sarri is going to almost prohibit them from playing in Japan from here on in. If you're a current Springbok, right, how your season works is that you play rugby championship, you have a bit of a break in October, so there's no Curry Cup play whatsoever for these guys. You then got to go into training for the overseas European tour, and then that kind of stops at around December, and then you kind of come home. So what the Japanese clubs have been saying is that you either play for us for a season or you don't really play for us at all. We can't have you just rocking up in December. So what would have happened is the guys would have played overseas tours and then just gone to Japan for that sort of end-of-year top-up on the cash. But Japan don't want that. They want a bigger commitment. And now Sarri are saying, well, you can't do that. You've got to have these mandatory breaks, and this is one of them. And something has to be done. Sure, the guys are allowed to make money, do whatever they want, but if you're contracted to Sarri, and if you are going to be in the Springbok setup, there has to be some hard and fast rules. It's not rocket science, really. These guys can't keep going like this. These injuries, I mean, Pollard's, what, 21, 22? You're getting injuries like this. Imagine what's happening to guys later on in their career who are already on the back of about 3 or 4 season-ending injuries. It really is a bit dodgy. But common sense should prevail. I really hope it does. If it doesn't, well, yeah, it's money talks eventually. That's kind of wrapping up all your headlines. We've got a lot to get through today. Look, if you have missed anything, if you go onto the Bounce of Seattle today right now, you'll see a whole bunch of other news you can catch up on. There is Champions League action tomorrow. Juventus play Bayern Munich, quarter to 10 SA time, and then Arsenal versus Barcelona at home. Well, if Arsenal couldn't get a goal versus Hull, they're going to have a bit of a tough job against Barcelona. And then Wednesday, Dynamo Kiev, will play Man City at quarter to 10, and PSV will host Atletico Madrid, also quarter to 10. That's your Champions League action for the week. Getting a bit dry mouthed here. Wow. Actually rocketed through this way too fast. I've got Dan in the studio. He's joined us from Conquer Sport. It's a weekly feature which is growing huge momentum, I believe, and conversation points just don't get any weaker. So a quick look at the messages. Colin says that also the New Zealand flag should be the Eye of Sauron from Lord of the Rings. That's actually genius, because you'd have that ring in the middle, you'd have the William Webb Ellis trophy on the right, and either kiwi or sheep on the left, with like an imprint of an orc. Yeah, I've got lots of suggestions for that. But Dan, we're going to get straight into you, because we need to give you lots of time, because this week's topic is fascinating. It is the subject nature of sport. Oh, just before I get your... Hang on a second. That one. Yes.
Hello.
Yes, got it.
How's it going?
How's it for blind luck? I just pressed a button.
Nice.
Cool, Dan. What made you talk about this week?
Well, it is all about... Last week, so Barcelona demolished another team, Celta Vigo, 6-1.
Yeah.
And that wasn't too newsworthy. I mean, they do that every week, don't they? But what was interesting was their fourth goal, which was quite a cheeky penalty. I don't know if you saw that. Did you see that?
Well, it was Messi about to get his 300th goal in La Liga, right?
Right.
And then he ran to it, and he just gave a little side pass, and there were Suarez.
Exactly, yeah. which I didn't even know was legal, but it turns out it is. And
well, you know it's legal. Watch Arsenal try to do that about 5
yes,
years ago.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Perez and who was it? Bergkamp.
Yeah.
Henry. Perez and Henry. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So that's fine, but the what struck me as interesting was that most of the comments on social media and in the press was overwhelmingly positive, and it just seemed like people were jumping on the positive bandwagon that is Barcelona. And someone made an interesting point, and though he works in Madrid for a radio station, a journalist kind of asked the question, what would the reaction have been if it was Ronaldo and Benzema? And to be honest, my reaction would have been negative, because my association and identity around Real Madrid and around those players is largely negative. Whereas with Barcelona, it's, you know, Barcelona more than just a club, and they play beautiful football, and it's Messi, and it's youth system, and it's...
And everyone kind of hates Ronaldo secretly deep down because he's both talented and good-looking.
And made a terrible self-indulgent documentary about himself, which I don't know if you've seen. But anyway, so the point is that why do we hold certain teams and athletes to one standard, and certain teams and athletes to another standard. And it just struck me as quite interesting and kind of made me think of a very obvious point, is that sports fans are a very fickle, subjective bunch, and we are very, very biased.
Well, I've got to ask you, it's a great point, as your points generally are, Dan. I mean, I'm sure you get this a lot. You make good points. But would you call yourself a sports fan or a sports supporter? I get this question quite a lot. So people often say to me on Twitter, oh, why are you being so mean about that guy? Like, I'm not a cheerleader. I've become a supporter of sport.
Right.
Because I've obviously been too heartbroken. I mean, I support the Proteas, the Springboks, Arsenal, sure, and the Stormers. I mean, I just couldn't keep up anymore.
Well, as a Man United fan this season, I find myself being more of a fan of football than an actual team.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I guess I'm guilty of biases. I'm a fan, but it's almost impossible not to be, is it? I mean, sports is an emotional thing. It conveys so many human emotions, and all of which are abstract. So the identity that we associate with a team is always going to be different to what another person identifies with the team.
It's just interesting because I've got this friend who, on the outset, would come across as cynical, dry, perhaps mean. But he says to me, I don't support any teams. So
right.
It means very little to me who wins and loses.
Well, what a pleasure that would be.
And I thought, hang on a second, that's not the rule, right?
Yeah.
You can't do that. How can you do that? And then I thought of it through his lines. Like, he gets to look at sport objectively.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, that's actually kind of cool, because everything that happens is actually interesting and good. When you're subjective, like you're saying now, we'll get into the stigmas around certain players in a bit, but it's actually such an emotional roller coaster, the subjectivity, because it becomes all-consuming.
Right, but isn't that part of it? Isn't that one of the reasons why we watch sports?
But is it the only way, though? This is the point I'm getting.
Well, I guess not. I guess, I mean, your cynical friend might be able to watch the game and just superficially enjoy the game and the plays and marvel at it, the athletic ability. But it would be like, I guess for me personally, it would be like listening to a piece of music and just understanding the notes that were played and appreciating how difficult it was to play that instrument. But if it didn't convey any emotion, you wouldn't be able to connect with that music in an intimate way. And I think it's the same for the sports fan. The reason why sport is such a popular entity is because it's more than just... Football is more than just passing a ball into a net. It's the players that do it, and it's the club, and it's the city that they're representing, and it's the biases, and it's the struggle that when your team is rubbish, and the elation when they're great. So I think if you take that out, your friend might be able to watch it without, you know, hating his Sunday. But where's the fun in that?
Exactly. It's always a little bit too sterile.
Exactly.
So just getting back to the subjective point. Now, I know that in South African sports, there's people who can do no right. Now, this comes from... I mentioned a couple of players, okay? So, right now, Fohan Behardin.
Right.
So, here's a guy who I believe is very much like Zane Kirshner on a cricket field. So, the love subjectivity comes in here where no matter what this guy does, everyone's going to hate him. Like, yesterday, he was 12th man, okay? He took an amazing catch in the boundary. It already got for six, okay? The comments people sitting around were so funny. Mean, but so funny. It's like, yeah, he catches it when he's not playing and this and that.
Sure.
No matter what the guy does, he's screwed. Like, do you think that's a healthy thing for us friends to have? Or, again, is it just natural?
Well, it's definitely not... It's not always healthy in that sense, and it can place an immense amount of pressure on an athlete, because if he knows that people are going to be against him, even when he's doing well. I mean, if you look at Baldin's average in T20s, it's actually not that bad. I think it's almost comparable to AB's. I'm not too sure.
AB is, I think, ranked 35th in the world when it comes to T20 cricket. But after facing 20 balls yesterday, I'd love to show me a better cricket.
Exactly. No doubt. But the point is that because of the association that we have with a particular player, when he's going through that bad time, It's compounded, and if he's going through a good time, he still doesn't get the support. So it's not healthy, but it's completely natural. It would be, I think, literally impossible for any true sports fan to remain completely neutral, even your cynical friend.
Yeah. Another conversation I had yesterday, Themba Bavuma. Here's a guy who averages, I think, just under 40 in Test cricket, one century, 200s. The guy I chatted to is still under the impression that he doesn't deserve to be in the team. Now, this is when subjectivity gets a little bit dark for my liking.
Right.
Because what else does a guy do? Like, if your stigma towards someone is such that you, no matter what they do, like, then I think sports fans need to take a step back and go, actually, I need some sort of objectivity here, some sort of middle ground.
Mm.
Do you think that like presenters and sport, the media itself, do enough to kind of have that middle ground people can look at? Or do they actually play into the subjectivity?
Of course they play into the subjectivity. They themselves are sports fans first and foremost. I mean, you wouldn't have become a sports guy if you weren't a sports fan first and foremost. So I think it's impossible for anyone who's writing or giving an opinion to remain neutral. I mean, I had a housemate who, right up until the day he retired, thought Jacques Cullis was the most overrated player in cricket. So, I mean, once again, it is literally impossible for anyone to remain neutral, I think. And that leads to so many opinions and biases and what's the right word? We let certain athletes off whenever they do transgress.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another one of subjectivity for you.
Sure.
Stormers Western Province over the years playing attractive running rugby.
Right.
This stuck somewhere along the lines back when the Duplessis brothers were having great interchanges and switches and stuff. But I believe that in latter years they were the most boring team. Again, it's the subjective nature is just coming and giving the wrong impression.
Because that identity that we've created around them, we, the South African sports public, has created around the team is that, oh, Stormers attractive rugby. So we just kind of take that for granted, and that comes into our biases. We have this bias that they do play attractive rugby without actually looking at the type of rugby that they're playing. So whenever they pull off an amazing try, that can be overhyped. If the Bulls score a wonder try, we might be like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's just a part of
their defense.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, here's another one for you. The French, are they unpredictable or are they just a really poor side?
I think they just have been a pretty average side for a while.
Totally agree with you. Yeah, again, it's like this romance of French running rugby and champagne rugby. No, they're just crap.
They're just not very good. Yeah,
and exactly. The thing is, because they're so crap, the team defensively then starts kind of giving them more space because they're not attacking enough. And every now and again, you might get one good break, but there's nothing really good about the French. Again, it's this
right. So we form these opinions about teams, and we hold certain teams to certain standards. But if you really explore what it is and what makes us have these opinions about teams, you might actually realize that it's not really based on anything current.
Yep. Andy Murray is another guy that kind of battles with that.
Well. Yeah, once again, you know, is he a great player? Is he a player that just is playing against great players? Is he just a plucky Scot who kind of happens to find his way into a semi-final every now and then? If you're a Murray fan, your opinion on the guy, because you are biased and because you have emotional ties to the UK or whatever the case may be, you will say that he is a great player and he's just been unlucky. I have no association with anything to do with the UK or their sports teams. So I think he's quite an overrated player, but that's my bias.
I mean, Sean Connery likes him because he's Scottish.
Right.
The rest of the world just thinks he's a moany ginger.
Who, Connery or?
Well, Murray.
Yeah.
Now, another one just on this point that interests me is Serena Williams. I think she cops a lot of flack. Now, again, whether it's a racial undertone, whether the fact that she is just so much bigger and stronger than the other girls, or it's just the fact that she's so dominant. Because the moment there is an on-court altercation or something, and whether she's right or wrong, and I would say generally she's got a decent temperament. She gets like really hot under the collar because she wants to win. I mean, she's ruthless. That's why she's won so much.
Right.
But then the moment it happens, everyone goes, oh, she's arrogant. She's such a bitch. I think she owns the place. Again, to this point, I think it's so unfair on some of these players.
It's interesting that she still has any sort of negativity around her, and as you say, maybe it is slightly racial undertones. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's because of the manner in which she's won. Maybe because she's American, and that bravado and that brashness that she kind of embodies can be perceived in a negative way. But if it were another athlete, would we be saying the same negative things about them? Maybe not. It's all these little biases that kind of form our opinions around the sports that we love.
Okay, I had another one here, which was maybe not so kind of relevant now, but Pierce Spies.
Yeah.
So there was Now, this touches on to religion and sport as well, how people obviously get behind these guys and the Bulls, the whole brotherhood. It's all about praying to Jesus and that kind of stuff. They thank him after the match.
Right.
Here was a guy that when you actually looked into it, superb athlete, and he really was a colossus in the age group games. When he came into the scene for the Springboks, he was hard running and he really made things happen. When they played in the Highveld, the guy was incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, he had one of the fastest guys in the field. He's also one of the biggest. Right against England, where I think he scored 2-3 tries, he was unstoppable. So there we had this thing like, this guy's an absolute beast. He's a physical specimen. He's the best eighth man going. He was man of the match, I think, when we beat the All Blacks in Rustenburg. He played 50 tests for the Springboks. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But break it down. Dwayne Vermeulen then came on the scene. Everyone was like, ah, so that's an eighth man.
Right.
But all the coaches, everyone bought into the fact that Pierce Beast is this package. But again, that's more marketing, which ties back to your original discussion point about brand equity and how important it is. So all these people that I've mentioned here, sorry, I don't know if this is a question. No, I'm just going.
No, no, keep going.
So all these people that I've mentioned here we're discussing, is it not also a job of brand equity to kind of use the subjectivity on their own benefit?
Well, exactly. So that brand equity can work for on-field performance, but it also works for off-field opinions, because as you say, we had Pierce Spiss, and everyone was, it was unanimous, he is the best eighth man on the planet, and he's going to become,
you know, clone him. Yeah,
exactly. But then all of a sudden, I don't know, he after the World Cup where he had you know, that injury crisis, and there was a bit of a controversy around, was he really injured, was he just taking steroids? And then we had a guy like Dwayne Vermeulen. So Pierce Spiss kind of went from a guy who was a potential, you know, golden boy of SA rugby to being damned and ostracized, and no one wanted him, which is quite a fall. You know, you would think there'd be maybe a gradual slide into mediocrity, but for Pierce Spiss it was a massive fall. And once again, it's perhaps because we had so much emotion surrounding this particular player that when he didn't do well, we kind of lost interest in a landslide kind of.
Yeah, and now what? I mean, where is he even playing? Do you know? Because I think he wanted to go play in Japan. He had some intentions of being in Europe, and then, well, that was kind of it. Well, Dan, there was another name. Shit, I've forgotten now. But it's a very interesting thing. But like, what I want to leave people with today is that when you watch sport, there's obviously some very subjective things that come into it that are almost clouding your idea. Mm. And look, you're entitled to call the Proteas chokers or call Behardin a waste of time, whatever, whatever.
Right.
But I still believe that just whenever I pick it up when I go to live matches, it's a bit embarrassing to think that, you know, you're missing out on so much. You could know a bit more by being a little bit less subjective, bit more objective to what's going on here, because you could be missing a good game.
Exactly. I mean, I guess if you take away that emotion and that bias and that subjectivity, you can kind of focus on the skills and kind of ask the question: well, is Behardin not good enough? Does Umna deserve his place in the T20 team? You know, should Dale Steyn be picked? Why isn't Morkel picked? And you can kind of look at it from purely sporting reasons. But as I kind of say in the article, where would the fun be in that? I mean, sport, at the end of the day, is a game. It's entertainment. And, yeah, we want our teams to win, but we want to invest ourselves emotionally in this and get tied up in the stories and the narrative around the sport.
Yeah. Okay, Dan, well, conquersport.com. All of Dan's writing can be found there. And you can follow Dan on Twitter. It's Daniel. And then his last name, Gallen, so it's Daniel Gallan. So tongue-tied. So there's always this last 20 minutes.
You got it.
My mouth has like an expiry date. Or just at Conquer Sport on Twitter as well. Dan, we're going to have a huge push towards T20 World Cup as of next month. So we might have to put the feature on hold for a second, although there could be elements within that we can chat about. So
for sure.
Again, well, I think we're just going to brainstorm it, but your feature's been amazing. Next up, we've got, our doubts, our biggest profile guest so far. I mean, is a voice that, well, some, you know, when you grow up with something, it becomes almost lodged in your DNA. And, well, I don't think I really need to intro the man, but, you know, it's an interactive show. I try to get the most out of the show, so I'm going to play you just a little hint of who we got coming up next.
Down that far side, Polu was up there. And it's Junior Palalulukaganga who gets in for the try.
Yes, that's it. The voice of rugby himself. Wow. Super Rugby starts this weekend, so to get you in the mood for this new, bigger, and supposedly better tournament, I don't think it is, but hey, you know, some people might think so. I don't believe it. Too bloated, in my opinion. But who better to chat about this than none other than the voice of rugby? It's Blades. Hello?
How are you, Garth? You fine? It's great. It's absolutely brilliant to finally be here at Clive Central. Heard a lot about the place, especially with you in the news and all. You've been a bit of a naughty boy lately.
Blades, I'm Ben. I'm Ben Karpinski. I host the show here.
Never heard of you.
This is the Bounce Show. I got you on to be part of
the Bounce. That's what I did out of a hotel in Durban. I bounced right off the pavement.
Okay, well, yeah, look, it's great to have you. I'm sorry, this isn't... Gareth does the morning show here. So I do the sports.
Shit, well, that's a bit of an anticlimax. I had a bloody song prepared and everything.
Well, perhaps you could still sing it if you really want.
No. If you aren't Gareth, then it's just a bloody waste of time. So what do you want, then?
Well, Blades, I just want to talk Super Rugby. Every week on the show, I bring something up about what's coming up. And, well, Super Rugby this weekend. So
hey,
I just want to get your thoughts.
Ginger, get me a drink. This is way too serious. Yes, carry on.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on the bloated expanded format, how you feel that SA teams are going to do going into this.
Well, fuck it, Junior. That's a pretty broad question right off the bat. How the hell am I supposed to know how the teams are going to do? Do you see tea leaves in front of me here? I don't even see a whiskey in front of me. It's terrible hospitality. I can't even say it.
Sorry, I mean...
I'm not bloody Dick Mallet.
Okay, look, Blades, okay, let me just refine it a bit then. 18 teams in the tournament now. This whole new conference, what do you feel about that?
18? Jesus, that's a lot of teams. I remember when it was the Super 10 back in the day when Transvaal was so strong. That was enough for me. But then it became a money game. And those dreadful bastard Australians started having a say in things. How did they get so many teams?
Well, first of all, the Kings are back.
Oh, Jesus. Those guys don't know their arse from their elbows, and that cheeky Watson guy can't even pay the poor sods. Might as well work in radio.
Well, then, the Kings are back, and then Japan's also playing in this one.
Japan and Argentina, the Shaguars, apparently they're there as well. How do the Argy-Bargies get in?
I don't know.
I didn't realize that fist fights and boisterous song was something this tournament needed.
I totally agree, Blades. I'm so happy you're so animated about this because I've been calling it bullshit from the start.
Japan! Are you pulling my bloody leg now in Super Rugby? That's absolute bullshit. Next you're going to tell me Richard Fleck is coach of the Stormers and that the Lions look like South Africa's best chance of winning the thing.
Well, yes, and actually yes. Fleck is the new coach of the Stormers. Geez. Eddie Jones was
the
there for a week.
The African Grey.
Eddie Jones, he left, and then, the Lions definitely matched. They're almost settled team.
You're a funny guy, Ben Karpinski, but who the hell are you? But seriously, run along now and tell Garth to come in here. I want to chat to him about the good old-fashioned way of broadcasting, not this social media rubbish.
Simon Hill, one of the most talented men in SA sports. He has been the voice of Blades for so long. If you haven't ever met Simon Dan.
Hello, Dan.
How's it going?
Black Apollo.
Yeah, good to meet you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to call you. I'm Ginger as well. So
I can see that.
I'm sorry.
No worries.
It was necessary for entertainment.
Fair enough.
Now, Simon, you have been doing impersonations of Blades for how long now?
Oh, God, Ben, too long. I feel like I am Hugh Bladen.
Are you not one of his love children? Let's be honest.
Well, someone once told me that I look like Hugh Bladen, and which is an insult more than a compliment. So I guess, yeah, you start to live your character, which is unfortunate.
And he's totally okay with you pulling the piss?
No, he wasn't initially. But, you know, he was kind of getting phased out by Supersport and getting replaced by a man whose name we shall not mention. And I don't know, I think...
Hey, Phil Melvitt.
Derek, he's a good friend of yours, Ben. And I think what impersonating someone, they say, is the most sincerest form of flattery. And I think it kind of kept him and made him relevant again.
Well, totally. I think it was a cult status that came around Blades, because when he was commentating, I mean, he was like...
It was a drinking status that came around Blades as well.
I mean, his commentary was kind of like Austin Powers fashion. It was a bit over the top and it was a bit antiquated, but it kind of worked and you just couldn't help but be a part of it.
But let's be honest. I mean, Blades, Hugh Bladen, we grew up watching rugby to that guy. He's the voice of our childhood.
Exactly.
They said the same about Bob Hewitt, which resulted in quite a few nightmares. But Blades, we grew up watching rugby, and rugby and Hugh Bladen go hand in hand.
Yeah, they really do, very much like brandy and coke. Now, is this something that you just kind of picked up one day, or do you practice it? Like,
I did initially, but you know, when you do it often enough, it becomes second nature. But initially, to get a voice, yeah, you got to practice it, and you got to annoy everyone around you practicing it.
And initially, getting drunk obviously helped the process, because your inner Blades came out a lot more.
Slid right into it.
I just want to play you a clip here. Simon's been doing this for quite a long time. He teamed up with Darren Scott on Jacaranda Days back in the day. That's where your talents first really came to like the platform of mainstream listening. And then through Balls Radio, and now you guys are on Mix 90...
Hot 91.9, Ben. Get it right, come on.
Okay, so I'll play you a little clip here. Now, Simon doesn't just do the voice of Blades. He does a few other voices as well.
Preparations for Super Rugby continues as the Bulls travel to London to play Saris, and referees around the world rejoice as Byron Buerter decides to call time on his career. I'm Hugh Bladen. Next to me is Nas Buerter. Hello, Nas.
Oh, hi there, Bladesy. Very sad to hear about Bucky's retiring. I compared it to Argentina winning a rugby championship game. You know it's going to happen one day, but when it does, you never quite prepared for it. That's it. A grateful nation thanks you, Buckies. Thank you for the headbutts and relentless racking of arrogant, overrated Australians. For the shoulder charges and post-match interviews in a language experts have now determined is English. Thank you for everything.
Thank you for the support you gave Victor, not only at line-out time, but emotionally as well.
Especially when the others teased him about the size of his legs, which are horrifically thin.
Ah, Buckies, thank you for the consistency. Not many people can say they've had the same hairstyle for over a decade.
Except Quibbers Visa.
Don't forget Rian Kravhagen. That shit hasn't moved in 30 years.
But most of all, Buckies,
thank you for your wars, man. During my time on this earth, I have seen a lot of wars, but I have never seen wars like your wars, Buggies. So thick and generous, very much like Percy Montgomery. When I put your wars in my mouth, Buggies, so many memories come flooding back. Memories of when I was a child in Paarl, holding my neighbor's vores in my bare hands behind his house on Saturday afternoons. I felt a bit guilty handling his meat, I won't lie. But he told me it was okay, that it would make me a man. Afterwards, I would eat it while his entire family watched. You should have seen the look of sheer pleasure on their faces as the juice from that vores squirted right into my moustache.
Wow, Simon. Wow. Now, talking about staying relevant, it's a bit of a shame that Div has kind of fallen away a bit.
Oh, it's a tragedy.
Now, what I've just played for you is a clip from the Rugby Panel. Now, you do this once, twice a week?
Twice a week.
Okay, so twice a week, you can hear Simon do this on the show. So it's mornings, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm trying to give you a soft plug here.
6 to 9. I'm in the heart of the beast here, Ben. I want to come in and plug my own show.
Hey, this is my show.
Okay.
And it's important.
6 to 9 on Hot 91.9.
It's very important for our listeners to know that there's always great sporting content out there, because this is the whole like plan of the Bounce Show. Mm. It's so that people can laugh and actually do something more, an alternative thing. So yeah, Div's kind of fallen off. I mean, every now and again, Sport 24 is so desperate, they either quote him or Daryl Cullinan.
Yeah.
I mean, two dreadful sources, but...
But Ben, I mean, if you've ever spoken to Div, you'll realize that we often interview him on Balls for sports content. We often have a chat to him, and you'll chat to the guy for 10 minutes and you'll walk away going, what the fuck just happened? What was that?
Oh, no, he's an absolute gent, but he just has the funniest sporting mind ever. Like, you think back, how this guy, the team talks he must have given the box. I'll be sure, none of the Springboks have written good enough books, but if they ever did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I think Bucky's Buerter is slotted into fly half sometimes, and John Smith was at, I don't know, fullback. Div doesn't, I'd never been able to make sense out of the guy. Now, but he's a good person. He's a good person.
He is. Yeah, he is a great guy. He's very caring. And we were trying to get him on the show the other day, actually. And I said to him, you know, I really want to get you on Gareth's show. He's like, yeah, I love 5FM. Like, okay, we've moved on a bit. Yeah. But he's like, that's the kind of guy he is. Now, you also do the voice of Joel, which I think might actually be your best work.
You think so?
Yeah. Again, like, how does someone like Joel feel about...
Yeah... Joel was fine. The person that didn't like it.
Your jokes are more colourful than the King's jersey for this season.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, Joel, out of all of them, was probably the coolest. Blades took a little bit of time to get into it, but once he accepted it, he was actually cool, and we've actually done a lot of work together since. Yeah. Div, not so keen. But him and I chat now. There was a time when he wouldn't talk to me. He refused to do interviews with me. The person that doesn't really take it all that well is Nas Puerta. And I don't, just for the record, Nas, if you are listening, I don't impersonate you. I don't do your voice.
now that's the only voice you don't do on the panel, right?
Yeah, so the main characters of the panel are obviously Blades, Joel, Divi, Nas. Then we've got Gerard de Villiers, Spikerish, who we channel from heaven.
Okay, so he was the old guy in apartheid days. He was like the Afrikaans Blades.
He was the Afrikaans. He was the Afrikaans Chick Henderson, because obviously Blades learned from Chick Henderson.
Of course, yes. Now we're going through the golden ages here.
Yeah. So Gerard de Villiers, and then there was Zandberg Janssen as well, who we have on sometimes. Zandberg Janssen was deaf, so he can never hear what's going on. And then we have little cameo appearances. Sometimes David Campese will come on. Sometimes we'll get John Plumtree. Sometimes we'll get John on. So it's a tragedy when these oaks disappear or they die.
Yeah.
A lot of them have left.
Bill McLaren's obviously he died.
Bill McLaren died.
So that didn't help a lot.
So sometimes we'll channel him from heaven as well.
And then do you ever feel like there's another voice you need to add to the mix because of relevance for these guys? I mean, anything else you're kind of practicing?
I'd love to be able to do Nick Mallett. You know, Nick Mallett or Matthew Pearce. Because they're prominent at the moment.
It's just that their voices are quite neutral. I mean, obviously, when a guy's got a funnier voice, that's why it's easier to have an Australian accent than trying to take the piss out of Dutch people, perhaps.
Yeah, you've got to be able to latch on to something. And, like, Matt, you know, speaks very well.
He gets enough opportunities. I mean, he does 8 different shows on Supersport alone. I mean, the guy's commentating netball right now.
And he went to Bishops.
Sure.
He paid a lot of money.
You went to Bishops. Therefore, you know, you're born with the golden platter in your mouth.
Correct. And... You know, so it would be wonderful to be able to do some of those accents, but I know when I can kind of latch onto something when it's possible and when I just don't think I'll be able to, and I don't think I'll be able to.
And do you ever have you ever prank called people with these people?
I once prank called Leon Schuster as Hugh Bladen.
As Hugh Bladen, okay.
And he fell for it. So I've got one over the king of pranks in South Africa.
Now, have you ever thought about doing alternative commentary? Something that we've been looking into doing. We do cricket commentary here on Cliff Central, and it goes easy because cricket's so easy. There's so much gap between play, it's easy as all hell. Rugby, on the other hand, is a lot more instant, a lot more difficult, and you've actually got to do some research.
Yeah, we've tried it. The problem, of course, is when you've got people watching the game on TV and you're an internet-based station, so you'll find that the commentary doesn't always match up to the speed of play.
Yeah.
And so it lags a little bit. So I think it's a fine line because people also want, when they're watching the Springboks play, it's a serious affair. And if you've got, it's fun when someone pulls the piss maybe for 5 minutes, but when someone's pulling the piss for 80 minutes, and sometimes people want, they'd like to hear it, but they also want a serious side of it.
Yeah, exactly. But just onto the serious side right now, do you reckon any of our teams in Super Rugby have any chance this year?
I don't think so.
And on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about watching it?
2.
Yeah, I'm at 2, and 2 is like my top.
Yeah. I think for me there is too much rugby, and I say that as a sports fan. There's a hell of a lot of sport on, and it's hard to sustain an interest. Mm. I mean, the seasons are just so long. I mean, this one ends in 2077.
Exactly. Plus, the best players aren't playing because they've been playing since... Yeah,
everyone's
3 years ago.
Look at the Sharks already. Look at the Sharks, look at the Bulls, look at the injuries already, and we haven't even started.
And you see Pollard might not get paid now because he's got a double injury on an initial one injury package or something.
Oh, is that the deal?
I think it is. It just sounds so fishy. But now they're not allowed to go to Japan because that's where they get screwed up.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I just think it's a lot of rugby. And I think that our franchise, they'd be diluted. We've got 5 teams.
Oh, five teams. We'd probably do three. I mean, the Cheetahs, if they shit the fan there, they're going to be terrible. And you got the Kings.
At the moment, Lurkey Yaga leaves, they're stuffed. And he will leave.
And he will leave. Open Mahoja then has to pick it up, and he'll get injured.
And he can't play lock. He's tried. Dibby tried him at lock.
So, unfortunately, we have run out of time. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you, Ben.
And, yeah, let people know where they can hear you.
Well, if you want to listen to... I don't want to compete with your brand, Ben. So, if you want to hear the...
Rugby panel is what we should do here, because you guys podcast the stuff as well.
We do.
Exactly. So you guys are on the same page as us.
Yeah, we're also online. So, go to xvr.co.za, and you can listen to all the rugby panels there.
And also, if there's a SoundCloud profile with that, in all the old editions...
Yeah, they're all there, archived.
You've actually got such an incredible body of work, Simon. And I'm not just saying that because you
could have just stopped at body, Ben.
Otherwise, on Twitter, where can people find you?
You could follow me at Salty Snolly.
Spell that for us.
Yeah, SaltySnollie, not Y.
Okay, Simon, so great to have you in here. Thanks for your
time.
Nice
to see you, man.
Yeah, you too. Hey? And you are looking quite good. I was in the gym very hard. Anyway, more of The Bounce Show next week. You can catch the podcast on The Bounce at CL.ca. Alternatively, go on to The Bounce page on cliffcentral.com. So much content, so much sport ahead. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll catch you back next time.
This is CliffCentral.com.